Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the French Connections Tuesday edition. Today is Tuesday, the 18th day of July, 2006. My name is Daryl Bradford Smith. Great to have you here with me today on this sultry summer day in France. We are experiencing a what they call in French a canicule, and it's a heat wave. And we've been having over, well, where I'm at right now, it was 100 degrees today, and yeah, summertime. It's summertime and the living's easy. And nobody can move very fast today, ladies and gentlemen. But that doesn't mean the information stops. It doesn't mean the bad guys are sleeping. They're probably in some air-conditioned space somewhere, not like myself. So I've invited back a researcher, a friend, a researcher, somebody who has been putting together very important information for us over a long period of time. And he's done the research on a recent book. And we had him on Sunday evening late to start talking about some of the issues that I think are not just important, they're critical at this juncture. And I think what I'd like you all to know before we do the interview is that this information shared with as many people as you can right now may be listened to at the moment. There is a more receptive audience because of the events in the Middle East. People are beginning to pay attention to the barbarity and the mayhem that's being created by the Israelis. And I think what we've got here is an opportunity. And I'd like to maybe pass on the idea that this opportunity should be maybe taken advantage of by our listeners to, you know, show the people this information. Show the people the information from Sunday night's interview, the Friedman interview, all of these different things. And I think you're going to start finding a more receptive audience. That being said, IamTheWitness.com is the website. IamTheWitness@Hotmail.com is my contact information. And my guest today, again, is Christopher John Berkus, and he is a he's also sitting in a sultry Chicago as we speak. And I'm welcome you, Christopher. How are you?
Well, things are cooling off a little bit here. I wish the same were true in Lebanon.
Well, sadly, it isn't true. And even though the American press is saying that these people deserve to be invaded, and George Bush is running around the world like a dribbling moron, telling stupid jokes that no one's laughing at, ignoring the fact that that there are young children and women and families being killed and displaced and injured. But more than that, there's a bigger plan afoot here, isn't there, Christopher? You want to give the people a little idea what the planning, in your view, is of these people, of the Israelis?
Well, the plan is very clearly the plan of Judaism, which is world government run by Jews, the destruction of humanity, and at present, the war against Gog and Magog. And they have thoroughly corrupted all the governments of the Islamic people so that these governments will turn against each other and provoke this war in collusion with Israel. It's very clear that Iran is working together with Israel to draw the United States into a regional conflict which will explode into a world war. It is also very clear that the governments of Saudi Arabia, Jordan, and Egypt are also working together in collusion with Israel to bring about this war, and eventually this war will turn against those nations when Israel conquers those peoples to its north and east. It will then turn and face those peoples to the south and west and utterly destroy them.
Well, do you think President Ahmadinejad is somebody who's been bought and paid for, or do you just think he's an Iranian nationalist? See, because he did say something about you. I mean, here, if he was working against with the Zionist Jewish community, he would not be promoting as virulently as he did the hoax that they said. You know, he called it a hoax. The Holocaust, he said, was a hoax. Now, does that play into somebody who's working with them? I mean, there's a question there, it seems to me.
I disagree, because when he says that, he is questioning Israel's right to exist in the minds of the Jewish people. He is therefore terrifying the Jewish people and uniting them against him and pushing them towards a war with Iran. If his genuine interest with the safety and security of the Iranian people, he would loudly be decrying this inhumanitarian action and be calling for peace, and again, iterating only that he wants peace. He would not be pounding his chest, making threats, and heating up the situation. He would be calling for international diplomacy. He would offer himself to the region in an idea of peace. He would not be saying that if we don't have peace, then we will have horrible war. He would be saying, let's talk about peace and stop the talk about war. He is acting exactly as the Israelis are wanting him to act.
Well, maybe you can answer this question, because I am aware that there have been backdoor dealings between the Iranians and the Israelis for many, many decades. While they were on the surface bitter rivals and enemies, they have done deals together, both militarily, criminally. They've done all kinds of stuff together, and even going as far back as Reagan years when they were doing the Iran-Contra deal, it was the Israelis that were acting as a broker for that.
Well, just as in World War II, you had the German people who were destroyed by Jewish interests who called themselves Nazis and Bolsheviks, and you had Russian and other Soviet nations who were destroyed by Jewish agents calling themselves Bolsheviks. You had in the Iran and Iraq war leadership which was working in with collusion with the Israelis to destroy both the Iraqi and Iranian people. Nothing that's happening today is unprecedented in history. It's a continuation of war and mayhem to do harm to these peoples.
Now, is there a parallel between these actions and the actions of the Donmar in Turkey?
The Dönme in Turkey have sent out crypto-Jewish leadership throughout the Middle East and throughout the world and throughout the world press to subvert governments and other peoples. This is well established. I believe there was a book written in Turkey either in 2000 or 2002 which details that history.
Well, see, because I do understand that the Dönme were instrumental in this secular government of Turkey. We know that, and we also know that they were also very important in fomenting the attack on the Christian Armenians, and we also know that the Kurdish region of that area is a bitter rival, but only because they're a rival to the control grid of the Zionists, is what I believe, and they knew that if the Kurds were able to build a country in the northern part of Iraq, they would have been a virulent enemy to Zionism, and so they needed to be stopped at all costs. And so it looks like they actually knew these kind of facts in the beginning when they were partitioning Iraq, and that's why they cut Kurdistan and the Kurdish people into parcels, because they knew this group was not going to roll over for them. And there's also some other things. I'm wondering what your take is on that.
Several issues. Very good questions. Please let me address them linearly and in a row. Kurdistan provides a northern corridor between Syria through Iraq to Iran. They wanted to have that corridor open, and this is one of the reasons they are destroying the infrastructure of Lebanon at present. This is a military stratagem and tactic to create a corridor through which they can take Syria, prevent any access to the sea, to landing sites where other armies could invade to attack Israel. And they also probably have very good control of the Turkish government, but they have to worry about what the Turkish people are going to do. So they have created a corridor through Lebanon. They will then attack Syria, and then they will have a northern route through Iraq with the Kurds as support to attack Iran. And Iran will work together with them to attack and trap the United States troops in Iraq. Now, the prehistory of this, the Dönme Turks installed the Young Turk government into Turkey. They were run through Greece and through Paris with the ancient Jewish mythology of positivism that science for the Gentiles should replace religion. They destroyed ancient Turkish culture, and they slaughtered the Armenian Christians. Now, this process taking place in Lebanon today is a continuation of the Young Turks' slaughter of Armenians. Many, if not most, of the Christians in Lebanon are of Armenian descent. Same is true of many of the Palestinian Christians. This has been an ongoing genocide of Christians in the Middle East.
Now, are the Armenians selected out because of their ancient Christianity? Is that one of the reasons?
That's one of the reasons. There are also hatreds of the Assyrians from ancient times and the displacement of the supposed 10 tribes of Israel, which probably never existed. There's no archaeological evidence to establish their existence.
How about the subjugation of Sabbatai Zvi by the Turkish caliph and in humiliation of what they considered at the time a messiah? Is there a retribution that they're trying to exact for that humiliation?
I think it's much deeper than that, but that was a very significant event in that it taught the Jews to follow the example of Esther and to go underground and pretend to be highly religious in other faiths so that they can subvert and destroy those faiths and enter into the governments and royalties of other people. And it
now,
was that began the Derneğin Türk movement, where they would pretend to be Muslims and in so doing destroy Muslim culture and destroy the Turkish Empire.
Well, for the people who have not ever heard of this particular discussion, you have at least heard of the term Young Turks. And these were what we call crypto-Jews, who did infiltrate the highest level of the Turkish government. So you will have heard of this I don't know where you would have heard of it, but I've heard of Young Turks. In fact, isn't there a radio show in New York City that uses that handle, calling themselves the Young Turks? And in fact, they're a group of Jews who are very progressive, who are trying to promote a very left-wing progressive ideal.
Yes, it is Jewish positivism. It is the idea that religion should be subverted, there should be libertine ideas, and licentious behavior is okay, bohemian behavior is okay, and that science should replace religion.
Well, let's talk about the next one you just brought up. There was another group that was spawned from this movement by Sabbatai Zvi that moved north, and it did become the New Bohemians. And again, that's a term that everyone's heard about. And in fact, when it's bantered around in the kind of conversations we use it for today, it means being avant-garde or being kind of cool. I'm a bohemian. Well, the fact is, these people are in the same camp with this licentiousness and these kind of bizarre practices. There's even wife swapping and all kinds of other nonsense that go along with this. Am I right?
You're absolutely right. And the intermediary was Jacob Frank, who believed that he was himself the Messiah and that the Messiah soul would pass from one generation to another through the process of Matem psychosis, which is reincarnation. And the reason that they behave in this manner is because they believe that all things, evil and good, stem from God. And that by the world either has to enter into absolute good or absolute evil for the Messiah to come. They don't believe that the world is capable of behaving in an absolutely good way. So they want to provoke the world to behave in an absolutely evil way. And in so doing, provoke God to bring down the Messiah and create the Messianic era. These Kabbalistic Jews believe that they are duty-bound to make the world an evil place and to destroy it. And they believe that in so doing, they will provoke God to come and create a new good world. And there were millions of these people, and they intentionally went underground and intentionally hid their plans and their goals. But we have writings from them, and we know that they subverted the Catholic Church, we know that they've subverted the Turkish Empire, and we know that they've subverted the United States government through their crypto-Jewish, well, he wasn't crypto, he was openly Jewish, people like Justice Louis Brandeis, who blackmailed President Woodrow Wilson and created a Zionist dictatorship and the Zionist League of Nations, which led to all the problems that we are facing today.
That's right. Now, I do know that, and that goes back to Hunter Meyer and Morgenthau, Brandeis, and the whole crew of the, and of course, into the meeting with Lord Balfour and the document signing and then so forth and so on into the 100 million murders or more that were perpetrated in the last century. But let's go back again into history again. We're in with Jacob Frank at the moment, and now Frank's movement morphed. Now, there were a lot of Jews in the northern European areas, in Poland and Czechoslovakia, Lithuania, Estonia, Latvia, these areas, not all the people felt tied to this belief system, and there was a lot of resistance against them. And I understand that in order to subvert them, they actually formed their own groups that came out saying they were against it, but manipulated them later on into being part of it. And that one group that has come out as a part of it was the Shabbat Lubavitch. And the Lubavitchers come from a city. The name of the city is Lubavitch, and it's these people came out initially against the Frankist movement, but now have turned as a supporter of these Zionist goals in the Frankist movement. And, I mean, this modern day. Am I correct in making that? It's kind of mishmash, but I'm trying to get a handle on how it's flowed.
Let me give my understanding of what happened. The Frankists were the foundation for the Hasidic movement, and the Chabad Lubavitch were a branch of the Hasidim, and they were opposed, at least on the face of it, to the pseudo-Messiah. Now, they claim to be ultra-Orthodox, but they are not the oldest form of Judaism, far from it. They also have these wild, orgiastic festivals, and they appear to be closely tied to the Frankist movement. And you can expect that people who are closely tied to the Frankist movement will deliberately conceal their true intentions and to pretend to be the opposite of what they really are. So you have to be very suspicious. But it is true that they strongly oppose the political Zionists, because they believe that the Talmud at Ketubot 111a prohibited them from praying for a restoration of Israel without the appearance of the Messiah. Now, that changed around 1950 when the State of Israel was formed. The Schneerson clan then threw their full support behind Israel and has had full support behind Israel ever since. And that, I think, was the split that happened between the Natura Karta and the Chabad Lubavitch.
Yes, and the Lubavitchers. Now, here's the interesting thing, because they are the fastest growing sect of the Orthodox religion, and in fact, they're also the group that has been invited more often than any other to the White House. In fact, the kitchens of the White House were all kosherized by Lubavitch rabbis, and they are also the ones spreading this new Kabbalism for non-Jews. In other words, they've been pushing it into the media. People like Madonna are trying to sell a form of it. In other words, they're trying to make it seem as though it's innocuous. It's rather genteel and cool. And in fact, it's coming a lot from their center in Los Angeles and New York and Miami and probably Chicago as well. Do you have any more facts on the Lubavitch recent push into the mainstream?
Oh, yes, absolutely. And they were also part of this tension in Judaism between the Zionists and the anti-Zionists. And they utilized it. They have always been trying to consolidate Jewish power. And they were strongly opposed when in Lithuania, which used to be called the Jerusalem of the East, the Gaon of Lithuania strongly opposed the Lubavitcher movement and Hasidism. Traditional Jews, when Hasidism first came out, were strongly opposed to it. And it's kind of strange that these people pretend to be the original Jews and the carriers on of the ancient Jewish traditions when they're a strong break from ancient Jewish traditions. And they are deeply rooted in the Talmud. And they are very virulently anti-Gentile. They are the most anti-Gentile of all Jews.
But how do they play this two-faced game then? I mean, this is very odd to me. See, I'm not the kind of guy, Christopher, is able to be a phony in front of somebody. I mean, if I don't like you, the first thing that's out of my mouth is telling you I don't like you. It's always been that way, and I'm wondering, what are they raised up to be deceptive? It's astonishing to me.
Their religion promotes violence, hypocrisy, and subversion, and they are told that it is acting in a divine and godly way to deceive the goyim. And they are taught that if the goyim were ever to learn what their true plans were, they would be destroyed, and therefore it is a matter of survival for them to keep their intentions hidden. Now, there is also, as what happened to Shabbatai Zevi, they send out agents who supposedly convert to other religions, but the conversion isn't genuine, and at home they practice Judaic rituals. And that also happened in the case of Spain, even before Shabbatai Zevi, with the conversos, the Muranos.
The Murano Jews, that's right.
They have a very long history of duplicity. In part, it comes from the fact that other people wouldn't tolerate their religion because it was so brutal, and it resulted in racism, segregation, and a constant tension. The reason that the Jews have been subject to so much persecution is because Judaism itself declares war between the Jewish people and humanity, and the Jews are compelled to destroy the rest of humanity. Now that they have established the state of Israel and probably are about to anoint their king once they're able to rebuild their temple, their next goal is the utter subjugation and then extermination of the rest of humanity. And I can read to you a passage from Martin Luther, who was very familiar with Kabbalistic Jews. He created the Reformation as a process of setting the stage for the appearance of the Jewish Messiah. He was considered Elijah by the Kabbalistic Jews, the forerunner of the Messiah. And what he said, quote, "Further, they," meaning the Jews, "presume to instruct God and prescribe the manner in which he is to redeem them. For the Jews, these learned saints, look upon God as a poor cobbler equipped with only a left last for making shoes. This is to say that he is to kill and exterminate all of us goyim through their Messiah, so that they can lay their hands on the land, the goods, and the government of the whole world. And now a storm breaks over us with curses, defamation, and derision that cannot be expressed with words. They wish that sword and war, distress, and every misfortune may overtake us accursed goyim. They vent their curses on us openly every Sunday in their synagogues and daily in their homes. They teach and urge and train their children from infancy to remain the bitter, virulent, and wrathful enemies of the Christians." This is a quote from Martin Luther, "Von den Juden und ihren Lügen, Hans Luft, Wittenberg, 1543, reprinted Ludendorff, München, 1932, English translation by Martin H. Bertram, On the Jews and Their Lies, Luther's Works, Volume 47, Fortress Press, Philadelphia, 1971, pages 123 to 306, at page 264.
Now, let me ask you another question about this crypto-Jewish mindset that they have. We've got a gentleman that I have heard information about named Billy Graham, being a member of the Frankist family, and that his family was actually immigrés to the United States, and his name was changed to Graham, and he was not a Graham from his heritage, but rather through his crypto conversion, and that in fact he was slated and earmarked from the beginning to subvert the Protestant Christians in the United States. Now, have you heard anything or read anything that would verify that?
I have heard such things, particularly from you, but I have not attempted to verify it, so I can't speak on that specifically.
But it wouldn't surprise you to find that people as highly placed as Billy Graham. Well, it always surprised me that Billy Graham was the guy that was invited to Russia in 72. It always surprised me that you know, in other words, they were allowing his form of Christianity in an atheist state. Now, why would they do that? Maybe because they wanted the Christians of Russia to start maybe being born again into the mindset of a Billy Graham type of Christianity, which is Zionist Christianity.
Well, such things are certainly not unprecedented, and we can look to so high an authority as Benjamin Disraeli, who was a Rothschild agent and became Prime Minister of England and subverted English interests for Rothschild interests. And he said that the Jesuits were founded by crypto Jews. Now, the Jesuits were banned by the Catholic Church because of their attempts to subvert the Catholic Church, which is one thing when these people say that the Jesuits are out to destroy us all. It's very ironic because the Jesuits from their beginning were a group of crypto-Jews who were out to destroy Catholicism. The Catholics cannot be blamed for what these crypto-Jews are up to.
Well, and that, does that still hold true today, that the Jesuits are involved with the Jewish control, or no?
I suspect that whatever they're doing has a lingering history, if not intentionally, then unintentionally, through the corruption that was introduced into the movement by crypto-Jews. I do not believe that they are any significant force today, and I do recognize that they have done wonderful things in terms of promoting education throughout the world.
Yeah.
They are not the enemy of humanity.
Well, I got my high school education through Scholastic Jesuits, and they taught me to be critical, and taught me to be the kind of critical thinker that I am today. And I've always been grateful for that education. And I wondered when, you know, knowing that most of them were in walkers. I mean, the guys I had as teachers were already in their 70s and 80s when I was in school back in the 1970s. And I knew that the Jesuit order was a dying order back 30 years ago. It is not a significant group anymore, both in numbers and in influence, as far as I can tell. And I don't see any of them in the administration, nor do I see them in giving money to congressmen, nor do I see them controlling the media or the Federal Reserve or any other organization. So for having somebody like this guy John Phelps come out and say that they're the ones behind everything, it's laughable in my view.
In my view, it's reprehensible. To accuse the Catholics of trying to cause divisions between Jews and Christians and other Christians, when in fact it is clearly Jewish interests who are trying to create divisions and may even be trying to create these divisions by falsely accusing the Jesuits, I find reprehensible.
Well, you know, I got to tell you, it does get traction, Christopher. You know it does. And Eric and I have spoken up very, very forcefully against that nonsense. And of course, we've taken some lumps for it, but I don't shrink from the challenge. Anyway, let's talk a bit here now about the planning for this. Well, there was a Jewish conference in Basel when Herzl was laying out the Zionist plan for the next century. This was, I think, 1895, I think, or something.
97.
That's right. Okay, 97. And wasn't it there that much of the protocols of the elders of Zion were unveiled to the supporters of Zionism?
That's one interpretation of events. Yes, I don't necessarily subscribe to that. I think that that was a means of consolidating power and defining themselves to the outside world more than I think it was a means of defining themselves to one another. I think the underlying plan has been known to Jews for at least 2,500 years, and it's to remain segregated, take over the governments of the rest of the world, and then destroy the peoples of the rest of the world. But I think what occurred was that the Tsar's police were monitoring Jewish movements around the world because the Jews were out to destroy the Tsar and ruin the Russian people. And they ruined the Russian people economically and then blamed the Tsar for what they themselves were doing. And the Tsar actively tried to save the Russian people from those Jews who were out to destroy them. And the minute that the Jews got their hands on the government of Russia, they began a vicious genocide against the Russian people, which is still being carried out today. Now, the Tsar, I suspect his police, gathered together their intelligence from around the world of what Jewish anarchists and communists and nihilists were saying that they intended to do. And I suspect that they sat in on many secret meetings, and the Tsar had crypto-Jews and Jews in his service. And I think from all that intelligence that they gathered, they put it together in the form of what they called the Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion.
Mm-hmm. Now, those protocols not being, and I've heard them called forgeries, but not fraud. And here's the interesting thing, because a forgery is a replica of the original, not a false document, but rather a replica of a document. And so no one has actually, within the Jewish community, said it was a fraud, but rather a forgery.
Well, I wouldn't say that no one in the Jewish community has said that it was a fraud. I suspect that many people in the Jewish community have said
that. Well, I haven't read that. I heard it's written up in like places like Wikipedia, which I don't trust because that's a Jewish encyclopedia system. But it's written, it says that the Elders of Zion was a forgery.
Yes, that is often the word that they use. But I think I would hate to parse words over something so serious. I think the genuineness of it is established by the fulfillment of it. And I think that it spells out in very explicit terms exactly what has happened throughout the 20th century.
Yeah,
and
I agree with that.
I think the Tsar's police had a very good grip on what was planned and what would take place. And they may very well have quoted long passages verbatim from what they heard. One such passage is Protocol Number 12, which addresses Jewish domination of the press. And if I may, I could read a couple of paragraphs that people would find ring very true to what is happening today. If you watch CNN, you watch Fox News, you watch MSNBC, it is very strange that these supposedly politically opposing organs of the press speak with a united voice and call out for war. Newt Gingrich has been allowed to cry out loudly for World War III, and he has not been rebuked by the American government or by the international press for those genocidal outbursts. Those are horrific, dangerous statements that should be roundly decried by all the leaders of the world, and I haven't heard one voice raised against it.
Is Newt Gingrich from the Jewish community?
I have no idea, and it wouldn't matter if he were.
Yeah, he
is certainly not speaking in the interests of humanity. He is certainly not speaking in the interests of the American public, and he is iterating rhetoric which comes right out of Israel.
Well, let's hear what that number 12 passage of the learned elders of the of Zion has to say about this.
The word liberty can be differently interpreted. We will define it as follows. Liberty is the right to do that which is permitted by law. Such a definition of this word will eventually serve us because liberty will be in our power. And because the laws will either destroy or construct only what we desire in accordance with the above-mentioned program. We will deal with the press in the following manner. What is the present role of the press? It serves to arouse furious passions and egotistic party dissensions, which may be necessary for our purpose. It is empty, unjust, inaccurate, and people do not understand what end it serves. We will shackle it and keep a tight rein on it. We will also do the same with other printed matter. For what use would it be for us to rid ourselves of attacks on the part of the periodical press if we remain open to criticism through pamphlets and books? We will convert the products of publicity, now so expensive owing to the need of censorship, into a source of income for our state. We will impose a special stamp tax. When a newspaper printing shop is started, bonds will have to be deposited, which will guarantee our government from all attacks on the part of the press. In the case of an attack, we will mercilessly impose fines. Such measures as stamps, bonds, and fines, the payment of which is guaranteed by bonds, will bring a huge income to the government. It is true that party papers might fear the loss of money, so we will suppress these after the second attack on us. No one shall touch the prestige of our political infallibility and remain unpunished. The pretext for stopping a publication will be that the publication in question excites public opinion without cause or reason. I ask you to bear in mind that among those who attack us, there will also be organs established by us, but they will attack exclusively those points which we plan to change. No one notice will be made public without our control. This is already being done by us. Since the news from all parts of the world is received through several agencies in which it is centralized, these agencies will then be completely in our power, and they will publish only such news as we will permit. If we have already managed to subjugate the minds of the goys to such an extent that almost all of them see world events through colored glasses which we put over their eyes, if, even at present, there is no one state which bars our access to state secrets, so termed by the stupid goys, then what will it be when we, in the person of our universal sovereign, that's a reference to the Jewish king, the Jewish Messiah, are recognized rulers of the world? Now, that immediately happened when the Jews took over Russia in the Bolshevik Revolution. That immediately happened when the Jews took over Germany with the Nazi Revolution. That has happened through a long process of attrition in the United States. And though they haven't imposed governmental sanctions yet on the press, they're in the process of attempting to do so through hate crimes legislation. And they effectively do so by calling anyone who differs with their views anti-Semite.
Yeah.
They even called Jacques Chirac an anti-Semite. Because
if anti-Semite means anti these people, anti-Zionism, then I don't shrink from that title. I what I'm saying to you is that these people aren't even Semitic.
And these people are also virulently racist. For them to call other people racist is laughable.
Well, the fact is, I mean, it's like calling a cat a dog. I mean, they're not Semitic. It doesn't add up here. You know, I hate apples, but I'm eating an orange. I mean, it doesn't matter the fact that why can't we get traction on the idea that these people aren't even Semitic, and so there is no crime, no foul here if we complain about Zionism because they're not Semitic people.
Well, that's one issue. The other issue is how dare they accuse other people of hatred for exposing their hatred. It is not hateful to demonstrate that they are expressing hatred against other people.
That's right.
It is not making war to call out for peace and to ask them to stop making war. And yet they perpetually accuse those who demonstrate that they are hateful of being hateful themselves. They perpetually accuse those people who are trying to bring about peace of being warmongers. And they themselves are warmongers, and they make war in the name of peace.
Now, are most of their operatives, Christopher, on some sort of payroll, or are they in large measure duped as well?
I suspect that many things go on. I suspect there are many family lines which go all the way back to this Frankist movement and to Shabbatai Zevi. And I suspect, furthermore, that Judaism itself creates a sense of tribalism, racism, and segregationism that keeps them unified. And through intimidation, they have gotten other people to view their agenda not as the hateful genocidal agenda that it is, but as a method of self-defense. The very formation of the State of Israel was based in part on the idea that they were defending themselves from anti-Semitism. But the reality is that they themselves created the anti-Semitism. They created the Nazi Party. They funded the Nazi Party. They
That's
funded
right.
the Nazi Party to persecute Jews so that Jews who did not want to go to Palestine would feel forced to go to Palestine.
And the ones that didn't, I think in some ways, many of the ones that were resisting virulently were actually some of the ones that were that ended up in the Treblinkas and the work camps and the labor camps that were built. And so, in fact, they had a... It seems like to me that their Nazi endeavor had two things that it helped them with. One, it got rid of some of their political opponents from within their own community, and two, it gave them an opportunity to have an event used as a whipping tool against the rest of the world.
Absolutely, and it also gave them a eugenics program to kill off the weakest Jews through starvation and disease. And as you are discussing, part of the protocols also said that they must attempt to discredit Gentile government. And it has always been their practice and the practice of Bolshevism to lead the people to distrust their own government, because it is government which can save us. And they are doing it today in America. They are trying to pit us against our own government and our own system, more importantly, our own system, so that we ourselves cry out for a revolution. We don't need a revolution. What we need to do is get rid of these Jewish agents who have corrupted our government and corrupted our press. Our system is a fine system, and we are a fine people. We should not destroy ourselves on their behalf. They should not be permitted to drive us to such desperate circumstances that we're crying out for revolution, because they themselves will lead that revolution and will lead us into ruin, as they did to the Germans, and as they did to the Russians, and as they did to the Turkish Empire.
So how? So basically here, but now here's the problem. Considering that most, if not all, of our congressional representatives and both House and Senate are either from this community or owned and operated by them, and then considering that our banking structure, our press, our media, and our judiciary is also controlled by them, what's left to save except the original edicts that were written down by our forefathers? And what I'm saying is that we need to go back to what we originally declared ourselves and get rid of these superfluous and ridiculous layers of regulation that have done exactly what the protocols have called for, to use the rule of law that they have layered upon us to be the yoke and the shackles that bind us. And so here, what I'm saying is that necessarily the revolution that I'm envisioning is a revolution backwards to what our principles. Not that we can ever regain what we had, but we can always go back and regain the principles.
I say don't blow up the bridge. Drive the usurpers from it. Don't ruin the American system. Don't subvert American government. Get the corruptors and the usurpers out of it. And don't fall for their mythologies and don't trust their dishonest press. But save and preserve what we have. Because if we start destroying what we have, everything will fall into their hands. The favored means for communists to subvert another government is to make conditions hard for those people so that they come to distrust government and call out for a revolution. When that revolution occurs in the name of freedom, liberty, and fraternity, these Kabbalistic Jews then make conditions even worse. And when they have the people in a condition of general panic, they propose that the only solution is for a dictator to take over and have tight reins on the government, and that he will or she will then be able to restore order. It's a trap from beginning to end. It is these same people who make conditions hard. It is these same people who corrupt the system. It is these same people through their agents who suggest to people that there be revolution. And then it is these same people who subvert the revolution to accomplish the ends they wanted from the beginning. What we ought to do as a people is educate our young, conduct our lives in principled and ethical ways, conduct ourselves in international affairs in peaceful, principled, and ethical ways, and get these evil corruptors out of our system.
Now, that's a tall order, and I'll tell you why it is. Because things have gone so far down the way here that I don't know that we'll be able to even. I mean, right now, Christopher, we've got most Americans screaming on behalf of Israel to kill all the Palestinians and to kill all the Lebanese, not knowing for one moment that any of these people had anything to do with this. See, we're in a country of dribbling morons, and I'm sorry, but by and large, they're ready for the rendering plant, these Nimrods, and I can't understand it because it was designed that way. And it was also designed for them to become dumbed down with fluoride in the water, which they actually employed in Germany during the Second World War on the German public. And they know what it takes to make malleable the society they want to destroy, and they've done such a thorough job of it. How are we going to dig back out of the precipice here? Because we're at the very edge.
We are at the edge, and I do have some proposed solutions. One good solution was for all Jewish people of conscience to get out of Israel, and that will take away the incentive of the insane Jewish leadership to conquer more territory for greater Israel. If a million Jews of good conscience, decent people, and let's hope that there are at least a million Jews in Israel who are human beings, say that we are not going to participate in the destruction of humanity, pack up and leave, it will defeat the whole mechanism which has been put in place to cause the opposite to happen. What they are trying to do is create a greater Israel and get Jews from around the world to migrate to Israel. If the opposite happens, it will destroy their plan. So please, people in Israel, get out, because it is a no-win situation for you. these people want there to be tribulations where the people of Israel will suffer terribly and miserably. Now, they believe that there will be a remnant in America and in Russia who will substitute for the Jews who will be mass murdered, potentially, in Israel today. And there can be, likely, no other outcome when they wage this war against humanity. Because what they are doing is they are pitting the Jewish people against the rest of humanity in a life-or-death war. The Jews of Israel cannot survive that, because if humanity wins, those Jews will be wiped out. If humanity loses, the only way that humanity can lose is for all of humanity to be destroyed. In either event, the Jews of Israel will be destroyed with the rest of us. So I call on those people of Israel who are human beings to stop now, immediately, this push for World War III. It will not end in your interest, no matter what the outcome.
Well, now we are pretty well down the way on this planning. Where in the stages of the protocols of the learned elders of Zion are we on the planning now? I mean, did they spell out the stage we're at in those documents?
The stage we're at is spelled out not only in the protocols, but in numerous Kabbalistic writings in the Talmud and in the Hebrew Bible itself. And it is the final calamitous war to destroy all Gentile nations and to bring about the end times. And that is what they're up to. They will not stop with the genocide of the Palestinians. They will not stop with the genocide of the Lebanese. They are then going to instigate a war with Syria and Iran. And you hear that mantra perpetually in the corrupt American media, which is leading us into World War III. Americans have to see that this is not in our interest, and the fact that our government is not crying out against this corrupt warmongering media shows that the government itself has been thoroughly corrupted by these monsters.
Well, let's do this, Christopher. We've come on to about 50 minutes here, and this subject is extraordinary, and it's vast. And the best way, I think, to feed this to the listener is through measured productions like we've done in the past and like we've done tonight. Is there a next step in your proposed learning about these facts that you would suggest to us here at the French Connection? I mean, I recommend everybody at least peruse the protocols. And
the protocols are found in my book, The Manufacture and Sale of St. Einstein,
yeah,
which they can find. It's in Chapter 5. If they go to JewishRacism.com, JewishRacism.com, JewishRacism.com. Go to my book, go to Chapter 5. There's a chapter on the protocols of the learned elders of Zion. Within that, there is also a subchapter on Jewish terrorism. If they read that chapter, which was written before these events began, they will discover that these plans are not unprecedented. And if I may, I would like to read a few quotations from that chapter so that people can see how these people have continually staged false flag operations in order to destroy the peoples that they want to destroy.
Go ahead, please.
Okay. In her book, Israel's Sacred Terrorism, Livia Rokach reproduced an excerpt from a 26 May 1955 entry in Moshe Sherat's personal diary, which recounts his impression of Moshe Dayan's plans to provoke the Arabs to respond by first attacking them, then stealing their land when they sought to defend themselves. And this is the quote from that book. The conclusions from Moshe Dayan's words are clear. This state, meaning Israel, has no international obligations, no economic problems. The question of peace is non-existent. It must calculate its steps narrow-mindedly and live on its sword. It must see the sword as the main, if not the only, instrument with which to keep its morale high and to retain its moral tension. Towards this end, it must invent dangers. And to do this, it must adopt the method of provocation and revenge. And above all, let us hope for a new war with the Arab countries so that we may finally get rid of our troubles and acquire our space. such a slip of the tongue. Ben-Gurion himself said that it would be worthwhile to pay an Arab £1 million to start a war. That citation is from L. Rokoff, Israel Sacred Terrorism, 3rd edition, AAUG Press, Belmont, Massachusetts, page 41. Another quotation from Ben-Gurion, quote, I propose that as soon as we receive the equipment on the ship, we should prepare to go over to the offensive with the aim of smashing Lebanon, Transjordan, and Syria. The weak point in the Arab coalition is Lebanon, for the Muslim regime is artificial and easy to undermine. A Christian state should be established with its southern border on the Litani River. We will make an alliance with it. When we smash the Arab Legion's strength and bomb Amman, we will eliminate Transjordan too, and then Syria will fall. If Egypt still dares to fight on, we shall bomb Port Said, Alexandria, and Cairo. In this fashion, we will end the war and settle our forefathers' accounts with Egypt, Assyria, and Iran. That is from David Ben-Gurion, quoted in M. Bar Zohar, Ben-Gurion, A Biography, Delacorte Press, New York, 1978, page 166.
Now, for the listeners that don't know, he was the first president of the country after its founding in 1948, wasn't it?
Prime Minister, I believe.
Prime Minister, I'm sorry.
I will quote something that was quoted in the New York Times by D.K. Shipler, Most West Bank Arabs Blaming U.S. for Impact, the New York Times, 14 April 1983, page A3. Lieutenant General Rafael Eitan, outgoing Chief of Staff of the Israeli Army, stated on 12 April 1983, quote, when we have settled the land, all the Arabs will be able to do about it will be to scurry around like drugged roaches in a bottle. Now, another quote. Amnon Kapaliuk wrote of Menachem Begin, the Prime Minister of Israel, quote, the war in Lebanon cannot be interpreted, even by its most devoted proponents in Israel, as a war of survival. For this reason, the government has gone to extraordinary lengths to dehumanize the Palestinians. Begin described them in a speech in the Knesset as, quote, beasts walking on two legs, close quote. Palestinians have often been called, quote, bugs, close quote, while other refugee camps in Lebanon are referred to as, quote, tourist camps, close quote. In order to rationalize the bombing of civilian populations, Begin emotively declared, quote, if Hitler was sitting in a house with 20 other people, would it be correct to blow up the house, close quote. That was from an article, Begin and the Beasts, in The New Statesman, Volume 103, number 2674, 25 June 1982, page 12. These people have been planning from the beginning of Israel and long before that, even in the book of Ezekiel, to wipe out the indigenous population of Israel and then to attack the peoples to the north and then to attack the peoples to the south. And they are carrying it out. And it will not end. It will not end until they have destroyed humanity. That is the goal of Judaism. Read the Hebrew Bible, and you will discover that fact.
Well, you know, Christopher, is there a suggestion for the next installment of our discussions? Because I do want the people maybe to look forward to what we can bring them in this next installment. Do you have something in mind that you'd like to start researching with us next time?
I believe we should expose the strategies that the Islamic peoples and the American people should do to unseat this power and to prevent World War III. And we have to get the world public to acknowledge that our governments and our press have been corrupted by these monsters and they intend us no good, and that we have the responsibility to save ourselves, to save our future, and to prevent this horrific war they have planned for us. And we can do it, and we must do it.
Well, Christopher, this has been a great installment, as usual, and I do look forward to it. You can look forward to it in the upcoming days, ladies and gentlemen, not weeks or months, upcoming days, this next installment. We're going to be working with Christopher rather regularly going forward here to get this story entirely out into the Internet. And I do want to let you know that you know, much or all of what we say here, as you've heard already, is documented and well researched. So if you wish to verify the facts that Christopher shares, he does do a good job of placing it. But if you go to his website and go to the page that he's talking about, or when you read his book, he has it fully sourced. The bibliography is made available. All of the indexing is done. And therefore, it's all provable, in my view. Christopher, thanks today for bringing this forward. This is a great interview, as usual. I've got lots more to share with everybody, so I hope we can have you back in the next few days. We do have, by the way, one of the granddads of this battle coming on tomorrow, as you know, Eustace Mullins. And Eustace has been fighting this battle for over 50 years.
I look forward to hearing what the gentleman has to say.
Well, he's a wonderful resource. He is getting on in years, and he said to me the other day that he's proud to know that the French Connection is carrying the message forward in this world. And he said, you know, I wondered just a few years ago if there would be anybody that was going to be able to fight after I left. And he said, now I know there's going to be a lot of people fighting. And he said that makes me, you know, he says that he feels that we're going to win this on behalf of the good people of the world. That's what he says.
That's exactly what we have to do. The good people of the world have to unite, and that hopefully will include millions of Israelis who will abandon this madness. Now that they have seen the naked aggression, the bloodlust, the mass murder, the mayhem that these people are out to commit, please, please stop it. You are not going to profit from it. No one will. No one wants to see you hurt or anyone else hurt. Let's turn this around and start working on the problems of humanity. It is insane for the world to devote its resources to 5 million racist, genocidal maniacs in Israel. We should be working on global warming, on education, on infrastructure, on peace, on humanity, on medicine, on science, on better methods of constructing our societies in viable ways. We should not be devoting all our resources and efforts to killing one another. It is madness.
Yeah, I agree with that wholeheartedly. Until the next time, Christopher, we'll look forward to it. Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Daryl Bradford Smith, and I want to thank you for sharing this hour with us today, and I look forward to having you back in my next broadcast. That would be tomorrow with the one and only Eustace Mullins. So until that time, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much, and be well. Bye-bye now.